the start of this limb on right now.
Roger, are these your P-23 stars?
Negative, these are P-52 stars.
Okay. Ten, Houston, how'd the stars look in this attitude?
Houston, in a telescope, I have difficulty telling the stars from the particles right now.
Right.
It's something that looked like stars, but I haven't been able to stop long enough to really see if they are or not.
Okay. Through the sextant there, okay?
Affirm.
Okay.
The Earth is just starting now to take on a little bit of the Terminators coming across, and we're losing around us on a bomb sign.
Roger.
I should see on the eastern side.
Roger, we're seeing that now. Come in.
I hope the colors are as good down there as they are up here.
It's absolutely fantastic. That's the only way I can describe it. It's really beautiful.
Okay, Houston, I got a question. Does that picture fill up your whole screen now? I want to correlate it with our monitor.
Negative. We got about quite a ways to go before we fill up our screen, Tom. Looks like about the size of a basketball or so to us. It's pretty hard. You're zooming in now, and we're just about to fill up the whole picture.
Okay, the monitor has a little different aspect ratio than the standard TV.
All right. Okay. Apollo 10, Houston, we're ready for the P-27 update, if you can give us a poo and accept.
Okay, and we want to get busy here. We're going to kill the TV for a while.
All right, yeah, thanks a lot for a good show, 10. It was beautiful. About right now, we from top to bottom, we have a whole Earth. We still have some on the side.
All right, Rogers, looks beautiful from here.
Distance 22,781 miles.
Somebody just grinding his beer.
Yeah.
No, I think he's happy too.
I kidding. Hello, Apollo 10, Houston. We'd like you to put the S-band squelch switch off, and when you're changing omnis, to pause 30 seconds in each position so we can get a good lockup.
S-band squelch is off.
Roger.
This is Apollo Control at 5 hours 21 minutes. Tom Stafford has indicated they're going to close up shop for a little while as far as communications are concerned. Apollo 10 is 23,059 miles away from the Earth. Its velocity 12,646 feet per second. We'll come back up if there's any more air to ground. This is Mission Control, Houston. ...25,033 miles from the Earth. Velocity, 12,157 feet per second. Glenn Lenny and the black team of flight controllers getting ready to hand over to Flight Director Milton Windler and the gold team at this time. I beg your pardon, that's the maroon team. Milton Windler and the maroon team. There have been a few brief conversations on air to ground. We'll play those for you now.
Houston, this is 10. How are you reading the Army?
10, this is Houston. We're reading you loud and clear. We had a little noise there a minute or so ago. It sounded like the S-band was getting weak.
Okay, we're in, I believe we're Omni D right now.
Roger, Omni Delta. Apollo 10, this is Houston, over.
Go ahead, Houston, Apollo 10.
Roger, we're through with the uplink. You can have the computer back and up telemetry to block. And on your primary evaporator, we'd like you to secure the H2O flow. That is H2O flow to off. We recommend not attempting to service the system until after LOI. Over.
Roger.
Hello, Houston. This is Apollo 10.
Apollo 10, this is Houston. Over.
Okay, just for information, I don't know how far away. It's far away, but we can tell that there's still a slaw panel out there just spinning around slowly in reflected sunlight.
Roger. Do you have any more information on the apparent size, range, or anything like this on it?
Oh, it's the size of Venus, but it's obviously a star panel because you can see it rotating slowly in reflected light.
This is Houston. Roger, up. Apollo 10, this is Houston, over.
Okay, we're maneuvering, auto-maneuver to an attitude to start B-23.
This is Houston, copy.
Yeah, it looks like our RCS fuel budget's in real good shape.
Roger, we concur on the RCS fuel budget.
Velocity is 11,602 feet per second, and we're now at an altitude of 27,546 nautical miles from Earth. Here in Mission Control, Flight Director Milton Windler and his team of flight controllers have taken over from Glenn Lunny. We have a change of shift press briefing scheduled in the auditorium of Building 1 in about 5 minutes from now. We've had some brief conversation with the crew since the previous announcement. The crew was advised that the mid-course correction nominally scheduled to take place at 11 hours 33 minutes will be postponed until the second opportunity, which will be at about 26 hours 30 minutes ground elapsed time. The reason for postponing the mid-course correction until the second opportunity is due to the fact that the change in velocity required will be very little greater for the second opportunity, and this, it is felt, will lessen the chance that further mid-course corrections would be needed en route to the moon. At the present time, we'll play back the conversations that we've had with the crew and then stand by for any further communication.
Houston, this is Apollo 10. Y'all have already loaded that W matrix for us?
Stand by. Apollo 10, Houston,
right.
Stand by.
It had the right looking numbers in there. I just don't know if the option is right.
Apollo 10, this is Houston. Roger, we loaded that in erasable and should be good. Over. Apollo 10, this is Houston. Did you copy?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chris.
Roger out. Apollo 11, Apollo 10, this is Houston. Over.
Roger. Go ahead.
Roger, 10, there will be no mid-course correction number 1. We're going to delay until the nominal time of mid-course correction number 2 to start with the mid-courses. And instead of just passing you the TLI plus 11 pad at this time, we'd like to pass you the TLI plus 11, the plus 25, and the plus 35-hour pad. The last one will be valid under the assumption that we don't have a mid-course correction 2, and we'll update it after mid-course correction number 2. For your information, the delta V of mid-course correction 2 at 26 hours and 33 minutes will be about 48.9 feet per second, which is only about 2 feet per second larger than we would require for a mid-course correction number 1 at the nominal time. Over.
Roger. Sounds like a real great idea. Sounds good.
Okay, then, if you're ready to copy, I've got three P-37 pads to pass.
Okay, stand by. Looks like the S-4B did a good job for us, and also what we calculated on that separation burn put us right down to money.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, Bruce, go ahead.
All right, your P-37 block data for TLI plus 11 hours, 01330, 5201, minus 165, 04637, over.
Go ahead.
Roger, TLI plus 25 hours, 02730, 5795, minus 165-07028.
Okay.
Roger. TLI plus 35-hour pad. 03730-5037. Minus 165-09435. Read back. Over.
Okay, TLI plus 11 is 01330-5201, minus 165-04637. Plus 25 is 02730-5795, minus 165-7028. And 35 is 03730-5037, minus 165-09435.
All right, your Apollo 10 readback is correct. And for your information, although you are now in a free return trajectory, your entry angle is very steep, currently about 65 degrees. In the event of lost comm, you could correct this with P-37. Over.
Okay, I understand. Thank you. 65 degrees?
Yeah, like nearly vertical.
Hello, Houston. This is Apollo 10. Over.
Hey, go ahead, Apollo 10.
Okay. Should I go ahead and turn my H2 purge line heater off? I may have forgotten it. I still got it on now.
Stand by. Apollo 10, this is Houston. Roger, go ahead and turn off your H2 purge line heater. And under our revised schedule of passing pads up, we're not currently planning to send you any pads at a GET of 12 hours. Over.
Okay, fine.
This is Apollo Control. We appear to have no further conversation with the crew at this time. Our capsule communicator is astronaut Bruce McCandless. At 6 hours, 10 minutes into the flight, this is Mission Control, Houston.
Briefing for Apollo 10. We have Flight Director Glenn Lunny and CAPCOM astronaut Charlie Duke. Glenn, you want to give us a summary of the shift?
Okay, and is the mic working all right?
They are.
How about this one?
That
one working?
Yeah.
Okay. I understand it was a conference after the launch today, so I won't say anything about the countdown unless you have questions later. Basically, as near as we could tell, it was a very, very clean count with the liftoff on time. The number we have back here is 7/10 of a second after the 16:49.00. I don't know what they had at the Cape, so we were very close to on time. I have a lot of numbers that I can give to you when I finish this thing, and I'll try to pick them out as I go through it. But let me just run through the flight plan as we had it today. And for those of you who had have a flight plan, at the present time, most of what we have done up till now has been just about according to it, and I'll talk a little bit about our plans for the rest of the night and tomorrow, but they are essentially, as you see, in a flight plan, except for mid-course one, which we will, in all probability, delete in the next half hour and plan to take care of that at mid-course two time. Okay, after liftoff, we had a very, very nominal launch phase, much more nominal than we're used to dealing with in the simulations, of course. There were a couple items about the launch phase that are worthy of mention, aside from the fact that it was so nominal. We ended up in orbit at about within a couple of miles of what we were shooting for. We ended up with about a 103 by 100, and we were shooting for about 103 nominal, and the orbit changes a little bit during the course of the 2.5 hours due to the venting on the S-4B. But the navigation systems and the tracking system all agreed on the orbit within a matter of a mile or so. So in all respects, the launch phase was nominal in terms of the performance we got and in terms of the conditions we got at the end of it. The primary evaporator apparently dried out during the launch phase. We've had this problem with this type of unit in the past, and it really isn't much of a problem because we can fly the flight actually without either evaporator. We would like to get this evaporator working right, although according to flight plan and according to nominal plan, we do not want to have the evaporators working on the translunar coast. So although we tried twice to get it working, we could not successfully keep it online. This happened in the past, and usually we are able to eventually get it online, and we'll work with that again when we get out in the vicinity of the moon. The other thing that we were interested in were the crew comments around S1C staging. We experienced some relatively high negative G on 504, and we had some today, although it was less than we experienced on 504, which is what the launch vehicle folks had predicted prior to flight. Best we can estimate it, we had about 6/10 of a G negative. The other thing that was interesting about the, not so much the launch phase, but the TLI burn, was the vibrations that Tom Stafford reported. Apparently he felt a little bit of something in the launch phase, and I can't say much more than that at this time except to wait until the men have looked at the high-frequency records, which really aren't available in the control center since that's mostly a post-flight problem. When we got to Canaries, we had a deviation in the flight plan from the nominal as a result of an apparent premature rupture of a burst disk at the Cape, as has been discussed already, I believe, today by Rocco Patrone. What this amounts to is that a burst disk in the command module RCS System 2 oxidizer side was apparently ruptured when they put pressure on the system, and the oxidizer fluid went all the way down to the engines. We felt more comfortable by closing off the line and opening the thrusters and letting all that oxidizer go out. We're now flying with two command module RCS systems, which have the propellants isolated with the propellant isolation valves without any fluid on the thrusters, which is the nominal way to fly, the design way to fly, although we've had a fair amount of test data on flying with wetting the thrusters, and there does not appear to be any deleterious effects. We just felt a little more comfortable flying this way. The rest of the pass was fairly nominal in the first revolution. A P-52 down over the night pass, down over the lower part of Africa and Australia. Over Carnarvon, the crew reported on the ECS checks, the redundant components checks. All of those looked good, and the radiators looked good. We ran our two-way S-band voice check at Honeysuckle as a natural part of that pass where we don't have the VHF system. So we were satisfied that the S-band was good for TLI. Over the States, we did the usual kind of updating we have to do for prepping for the translunar injection burn, state vectors and some pad information to prepare the pilots for the burn. They extended the docking probe, and there's a very good physical cue when that's extended. And everything looked good for the TLI burn. We had in the Marshall Center and over in Alabama, we run out the guidance and a second burn, the TLI burn, to evaluate how well fixed we are for propellants, and we were in excellent shape on the propellants, just about what the pre-flight predictions were, as a matter of fact. We started into the TLI preps then in earnest as we left the Canary Islands. There was a report from the crew at the Canary Islands about a small white streak on the right-hand window, apparently vertical, something that looked like it had been a brush paint or something, a fine brush paint. Apparently there's no problem. We haven't seen any window deterioration yet as we had experienced in the past, although on the last flight we felt we had the fix for that. During the translunar injection burn, which again was essentially nominal in all respects, within the pre-flight numbers and the flight plan numbers, within those numbers, a couple of seconds. The only thing that happened during that burn out of the ordinary was an O2 flow highlight, which was just due to cabin replenishment. The regulators called for some more oxygen, and that's why the light. Shortly after the TLI, it was pretty obvious that the cutoff was very normal and nominal. The guidance systems, both in the spacecraft and the launch vehicle and the tracking data, all agreed very closely. It takes a little while to build up a real good solution with accuracy with the ground tracking data. However, what we've been able to come up with so far is all confirmed that the TLI cutoff is nominal. Separation, I have some times. If anybody's interested, Jack said some people were interested in times. We separated at, a GET of 3 hours, 2 minutes, and 48 seconds. John Young, by that time in the left seat, was back around and docked at 3 hours, 17 minutes, and 47 seconds. That's a little bit later than it shows in the flight plan. However, John was obviously taking his time doing that, and as a result of that, we're probably about 100 pounds ahead of the flight plan numbers, about 90 pounds, in RCS usage at this time. So we're in good shape there. After the docking and throughout that period, there was a TV available as the crew was able to turn it on while they were doing various parts of their activity. They had to pressurize the spacecraft, the command module, a little bit higher than normal and pressurize the for pressurization of the LEM tunnel. Now, the one thing they reported there was that some mylar on the top of both hatches apparently came loose during the inflow of air to that area and tore some of the mylar up. That just appears to be nothing more at this time than a small annoyance problem, and I'm sure they're picking that stuff up as they catch it. I gather there really wasn't very much of it anyway. All these sequences appeared to us in the control center and from all reports by the crew to proceed just about by the book. After turning around and getting docked with the LEM, the problem, of course, is to get the tunnel pressurized and get the LEM ready to pull out from the launch vehicle. That was done just at about all the nominal times. LEM ejection might have been just a little bit early. Yes, we ejected from the LEM. We took the LEM out of the S-4B at about 03:56:24, which is about 14 minutes early on the flight plan timeline. We actually delayed it a little bit to wait for a vent to finish on the Saturn. Actually, it was a non-propulsive vent, but as long as we're not in any hurry, we don't like to separate while the vehicle's doing anything like that at all. The evasive burn was done at the nominal time. The timing of the evasive burn is relatively insensitive. There may be some confusion about that. Let me try to describe briefly how that works. If this is the Earth's surface and we're going this way away from it towards the moon, the Saturn is like this with the engine on this end and the blunt end looking this way. The spacecraft then is pointed mostly down but a little bit in the direction of flight, pitched down about 75 degrees. So the burn tends to be in the direction of flight but mostly down. So the net effect is to kind of slow down the trajectory a little bit and provide separation from the Saturn. All of that appeared to go very normally with the spacecraft. The Saturn was then maneuvered in a pre-planned sequence through essentially two different sequences, the first being an experiment where we dumped the locks for 8 seconds to see what the cooling effects of that kind of a dump would be, and we repeated the 53-second fuel lead, which we did on Apollo 9, to again see how the system cooled down for that kind of a chill, running the cold fluid through the engine. After that time, we performed the slingshot maneuver, which is essentially pressurizing the LOX tank and dumping what's left of the LOX tank. That was done with the planned 5-minute dump. Based upon that, we hit just about in the middle of the delta V window that we had to hit. We got about 126 feet per second all told out of that. We had a further Ullage motor burn planned with the Saturn, but we didn't need to do it since the trajectory is such to go around the right-hand side of the moon as the command service module will go around the left-hand side. The Saturn will then proceed into a solar orbit. They're getting some tracking data to update the exact characteristics of that orbit that I don't have yet and probably should be forthcoming in a couple hours or a couple of shifts, as the case may be. The rest of the time was primarily onboard work and getting the spacecraft configured. Things are going to quiet down fairly quickly. Program 52 to realign the platform, to have update and that sort of thing. The crew's doing some cislunar navigation and marking the Earth horizon, and this, as you recall from Apollo 8, is essentially a calibration of the particular man's eyes with the Earth horizon as to where exactly he would define the horizon so that you can then put that number back in the computer to update the navigation if we have to take any of these stars, star sightings subsequently. We have had planned in the flight plan a mid-course maneuver out here a little ways at 11 and a half hours. However, based on a dispersion analysis that we have done on this flight, it is more desirable to perform this burn at mid-course two time in order to minimize the possibility of having further mid-courses. In other words, if we take enough tracking data to do the mid-course as well as we possibly can at mid-course two time, we have about a 90 to 95% chance of not having to do any more mid-courses at all prior to LOI. So it is our preference to skip this one if we can, and there's no real problem with skipping it because we're not far enough from nominal to have any kind of an error built.